The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and video streaming live. Also, you can go to GaryKnoll.com if you'd like to watch today's program. Our guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Jim Gottstein, and we're going to talk about what I began yesterday. Throughout this year, on 20 or 50 occasions, however much information we have, that's what we're going to share about why we are an over-medicated society. We have too many medications, we have too many sick people, and then we have too many new diseases that are being created that don't really exist, especially in the mental health field. And we want you to know, don't get trapped. Or don't let your kid get trapped. Don't give a teen screen. If your school teacher refused, get your unions to ban teen screen. This is nothing more than a screening test that's given in schools that is supposed to determine whether or not your child has a good mental health status. But it's really designed by the pharmaceutical company under former Governor Bush in Texas. That's where it evolved from. In order to trap tens of millions of students into answering questions that then would allow them to be labeled as, gotcha, you've got a problem, and we've got the solution. So that's what we want to get by. We want to stop teen screen. We want to stop all this diagnosing, because all they've done is pathologized part of life. So this is a major effort that we are engaged in, just like last year was stopping nuclear proliferation and closing down Indian Point, stopping hydrofracking and challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines and the autism vaccine link, the genetic engineering of food, food irradiation, where they irradiate your food. All these are major issues. They're continuing. Oh, we're not stopping, but we're adding new ones to them. And the over-medicalization of our society, which, by the way, just so you know, it's the number one way we spend money. You think our defense industry is bad? We spend three times more on our healthcare system. And yet, 39 other countries, you can live a longer and healthier life. Individually, we spend more. It's the number one reason outside of home foreclosure for bankruptcy, medical bills that we can't pay. So we're devoting a lot of attention to it. So that's what we're going to talk about today with my guest, the fraudulent manipulation of Medicaid to pay for the drugging of our children with drugs not medically indicated for conditions. And we should ask him and Will about teen screen. He is, by the way, the co-founder of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights. And we're going to go after Eli Lilly today with Zyprexa. And we're going to talk about the Zyprexa papers. This is a whole bunch of new information, always involved in investigative journalism and whistleblowing. Also today, I'm going to ask everyone in New York State and New Jersey who are listening to contact their First Educate Yourself. We have dozens and dozens of articles on why gas hydrofracking does not create jobs. That's a myth created by the lobbyists for the gas industry. We will tell you why we can say no to that argument, because that's the argument they're now using with Governor Cuomo and the New York State legislators through ALEC, and we can prove that also, that ALEC, a very corrupt group of people who buy influence and get your legislator from the state to agree to laws that they put in place which protect and profit them or take away some form of legislation or regulation that would interfere with them making profits. They're selling them on this idea. We're going to bring hundreds of thousands of jobs to New York. No, you're not. That's a lie. So I'm going to give you the information today. You can follow up by reading the articles. Then please contact the governor's office and contact your state legislatures. Send them copies of the articles that we have posted. And just so you know, 24/7, we have a group of scholars and researchers in this office here at 83rd and Broadway. All they do is review progressive articles that empower people around the world from hundreds of different sources, select the best ones by categories, and load them up every hour on the hour. I mean, not even Al Jazeera or any of the other services do this. We're way ahead of everyone in the world. We could put up hundreds of articles per day. Why don't you go to the Huffington Post and see what kind of articles they put up? And then look at the articles we put up. We only select articles that must be empowering, give the truth, and be from a progressive point of view. So we've got them all on hydrofracking. Then I'm going to talk about something you may or may not be aware of from Naked Security. It's about U.S. Customs can now seize your laptops and cell phones, demand your password, and download all the information off your laptops, take all your photographs, all your emails, everything you've ever had on your laptop or cell phone, without you being able to do a thing about it. They don't have to give you back the cell phone. They can erase your information. They can keep your information forever, share it with the FBI and other security agencies. Did you know that? You better, because it's happening. Also, a short commentary from Francis Boyle, professor of international law. What I'm not seeing in all the debates on the right, they're saying, yes, we have to invade Iran, all for spurious and false reasons. The same Judith Miller banged the drums for a false war notion. And on the left, we're saying, well, let's not be too hasty. I'm giving you a different perspective from Professor Francis Boyle. Waging war against Iran is a criminal act. It is an absolute violation of international law, and the death toll from the World War III will be incalculable. So I'm going to give you a short commentary on that. Another commentary today, and this is something new I'm adding to the program. I'm adding an opinion commentary, a content piece every week, one per week. Today it's from Joya Dalton. Joya is an artist, an activist, a feminist. And her op-ed piece is Obama the Trojan Horse? A bad boyfriend, a psychopath, or all three? Her opinion, and after I read her opinion, you can share yours on our feedback. Iraq in shambles. This is from op-ed news from Dark Jamal. I haven't heard anyone do a commentary of what it means to be a person waking up today in Iraq, after we have done our exit and all the hero soldiers have come back and all the politicians patting each other on the back. We have brought democracy to this nation that was in shambles, and we have brought stability and security. We haven't brought any of that. But this commentary will show you what it's like to go through a day, just a day, as an average person in Iraq. And you won't believe how we left the country, but not a single American media is there to show you the true story. We will. Let's begin, always with the latest on health and healing, and always with, when I'm selecting this information, I select this with the idea, will this empower people? If it empowers them, good, I use it. If it doesn't, I don't. For example, I'm a big believer in using vitamin C. Now, I don't tell you how much I use, but it's mega dose. Because between my flying and driving and long hours, you put a lot of stress upon the body. But think if you just go to work every day and you work in a cubicle and there are people all around you and they're coughing and sneezing and you're living and working in a petri dish, that places a lot of stress on you. Let's say you're overweight. That's stress on your immune system. You have a precondition like heart disease or arthritis. That stresses your immune system. So there's no shortages of reason why we need extra vitamin C. This is the latest. And everything I share comes from peer-review literature, not industry-supported. Quote, vitamin C megadosing continues to unleash healing miracles around the world. And I'll quote this from P.F. Lewis. Remember the story of Alan Smith from New Zealand and his dramatic recovery from a coma with megadoses of vitamin C? That story went viral and was featured in the New Zealand version of 60 Minutes. But some sources didn't have it quite right. The megadose vitamin C was not by IV for the last 2 weeks. They were through a unique new oral C product. Alan pulled out of his coma from whiteout pneumonia, lungs whited out in X-ray, and complications with leukemia. He and his life support and doctors were threatening to turn it off and let him die when his family intervened. They went through a series of sagas and legal hassles to get the hospital to even give him an IV vitamin C. The doctors complied at first, and there was enough improvement to convince the hospital staff not to pull the plug on his life support, as they were going to do, and had threatened to do, and demanded to do. But the hospital felt they knew better and stopped the IV vitamin C. Alan got worse. After legal intervention, they continued at only 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C instead of the 50,000 milligrams daily. Alan's condition went into critical limbo. Alan Smith only began to improve after taking lipospheric packets, and that's a very high, powerful one. Now, so how did 6 grams per day of a special vitamin C oral compound manage to do the work of 50 to 100,000 milligrams of IV? The mechanics of liposomal encapsulated vitamin C. And this is really putting you way ahead of the curve, because no doctor, no one I know, is doing this now. But watch after today. Watch people asking their doctors about this. Once again, it was like, I remember the first time I used 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C on a person. It was a woman who had stage 4 breast cancer, metastasized, and kept going up, and her body tolerated, and the doctor said, it's stable, but 8 weeks later it wasn't stable. Her tumor mass began to shrink. All of her life signs improved. Today, she's completely healthy and cancer-free. That is where you knew you had a breakthrough. It's just that people were giving too little vitamin C compared to what the disease required. Now, cardiologist and orthomolecular specialist Dr. Thomas Levy discovered exactly why the clinical results of this type of oral C could mask the efficacy of many times as much vitamin C by IV, which is intravenous. Dr. Levy was skeptical at first. He had treated thousands of patients with IV vitamin C and is seriously involved with orthomolecular, meaning high-dose vitamin treatment medicine. He couldn't believe what was happening with this oral vitamin C compound and its ability to match or surpass clinical results with much higher doses. And that's where it all began. Tiny particles of vitamin C are coated with phospholipids. They create molecules of vitamin C coated similar to the cell walls. Thus, those coated vitamin C molecules can slip into the cells easily. The encapsulation also avoids diarrhea thresholds of normal vitamin C when it goes above about 1,000 milligrams. And it's not expensive, much more accessible than IV treatment. And and it's very, very highly bioavailable. So this is the next step in our vitamin C, and that is the improved cellular phospholipid encapsulated vitamin C molecules. Steak, well, it was on the menu for Venus Williams. Now, the tennis star goes vegan. And, quote, this is from the Post game. Venus was diagnosed with a Sjogren's syndrome this past summer. It's an incurable immune system disorder that caused her to pull out of the U.S. Open in August. And through the recommendations of her sister Serena, Venus began looking into holistic treatments for the disease, which has no conventional remedies. The 7-time Grand Slam winner decided to give up meat and dairy, opting for a new, raw, vegan diet to help her manage her symptoms. Those included she had fatigue, dry mouth, dry eyes, and it's made a big difference. She was feeling chronic fatigue for years, and she said, quote, "I would go back to the doctor and start crying. I couldn't help it. I just wanted a chance to play on the same field as other people. I want to feel normal." But as frightening as the diagnosis was, it was also a relief. Despite the terrible news, she started looking around, and she found alternative treatments, and now feeling better. She is feeling better, and she's on a diet. Good for her. Whole grains, vegetables, nuts, seeds, nothing bottled, box, can. Well, I wish her all the best. And because she is an opinion leader by her celebrity status, hopefully other people will get the idea of how important a vegan diet is. Sculptured by weights in a strict vegan diet. This is from the New York Times, of all places. Jimmy Sitko gets up at 4 most mornings, works out 2 to 4 hours a day, and can bench press nearly twice his weight. He has a shaved head and brightly colored tattoo on his left arm, and he can easily be mistaken for a Marine separated from his platoon. His apartment is filled with medals and trophies from bodybuilding competitions, snapshots of his tan, ripped physique, and full flex. His uniform is an assortment of sweatpants and hoodies, which he occasionally lifts when his abs look particularly fierce. But Sitko is among a niche of community vegan bodybuilders. And so good for him. Now, I've been helping and counseling bodybuilders and people in all sports, football, basketball, track, boxing, who are vegan. And it's interesting how few of them want to acknowledge it. When they're getting more strength, have greater recovery time, they have their mitochondria are flashing faster, they have longer endurance. And I say, why don't you share this? And they're actually afraid that they'll be subject to ridicule because, well, you know, people in these sports are supposed to be big meat eaters and be taking this artificial hormones, and they're not. Nothing artificial, and yet they have the body mass and muscles, and they're doing great. Quote, 200 million people use illegal drugs. What is the toll on health? From Janine Stein, Los Angeles Times. I'll quote this. About 200 million people around the world use illegal drugs every year, and that may be taking a toll on health and death rates in various countries. The study, part of a series the journal Lancet is doing on addiction, offers a plethora of information about use of opiates, amphetamines, cocaine, and marijuana worldwide based upon reports about drug use, drug dependence, death, and health-related fallouts from illegal drug use. Now, yeah, we do see this, and there's probably a lot more than that. I'm going to be doing a whole 2-hour special on our war on drugs, and it's going to be based upon several points of view. One is, we don't need a war on drugs. First and foremost, we should be asking ourselves, why are people taking any drug? Shouldn't we start with a cause, whatever the cause, and then work from there to help that person have healthier choices? And we shouldn't be criminalizing this. But there's a whole group of people who've already are profiting from privatizing prisons. They are giving enormous amount of support to the Democrat and Republicans, pushing for harsher sentences. And how does society exactly benefit by putting someone in prison for 6 years who had 2 grams of marijuana on him down in Florida? How exactly do we become a better society? So I'm going to talk about this in depth, because they give you no causes. They just make the statistic. Well, the statistic doesn't tell us anything. We got to get beyond that. And finally, if you start taking soy, non-genetically engineered organic soy, early in life, according to an article published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention, you will reduce your breast cancer risk. Their major study, and it shows that those women who took soy, tofu, miso, tempeh, soy milk, early in life, had a much lower rate of breast cancer. That's good news. Now, specifically to a couple quick around issues. This is from Naked Security. Quote, the American Civil Liberties Union has brought a suit against the U.S. government over its seizure of a laptop of a computer security consultant. The seizure carried out at a Chicago airport without a search warrant or any charges of crimes. According to a report in the Boston Globe, the consultant, a former MIT researcher, David House, was returning from a rest and relaxation when federal agents seized his laptop. According to the article, the government wanted to know more about any connections he had to anything and everything. And they took his computer, and he was told you were in a constitution-free zone. I haven't heard of that before. So evidently, airports are constitution-free zone. The Constitution of the United States does not apply. They can do anything, say anything, act in any way, take anything, seize anything, quote, barring invasive techniques such as strip seizures, government agents are free to discard Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable search and seizure. They don't need reasonable suspicion or probable cause, and they can take what they like, be it laptops or smartphones. And how many have been taken just recently? 5,000? So, forget, quote, forget privacy rights. And what guarantees do you have if they take your laptop or cell phone that they'll treat your data with respect? Well, they don't. According to Customs and Border Protection Agency spokeswoman Joanne Ferreira, they told the report, the Trade Secrets Act prohibits federal employees from disclosing confidential business information. But they can take anything, download it, and look at it. So every picture, every email, everything you have, they now have. And they can share that with every federal agency, and they can share that with anyone they want to share it with. You'll never know what happened to your material. And have you heard about that? Any editorials? Any complaint? No? On to the next one. Let's stop gas fracking. And let's stop the lies that they're going to convince the governor, or the governor is hoping he can use then to cover himself when he makes his political move to go ahead and greenlight a lifting of the moratorium of gas fracking in New York. From Helene Jorgensen from Common Dreams, quote, natural gas companies are trying to sell fracking as the solution to all the economic ills ailing this country. Supposedly, fracking can bring the economy out of its current stagnation by creating unaccountable new jobs without running up government deficits and even save us from global warming in the process. So how come local residents and environmentalists oppose fracking? Well, the short answer is that fracking does not create local jobs. It lowers property values and pollutes the water we drink and the air we breathe. Hydraulic fracking, or fracking for short, is drilling for gas buried more than a mile under the ground in hard rock layers. In order to extract the gas, a toxic cocktail of chemicals is pumped deep into the ground to fracture the rock. In recent years, the state of Pennsylvania has embraced the fracking boom, and more than 4,500 new wells have been drilled. The state of New York has taken a more prudent approach by implementing a moratorium until the environmental and economic effects have been evaluated. The New York Department of Environmental Conservation is currently seeking public comments on the issue. By the way, I think that deadline is today or tomorrow. That's why you have to contact them. That's the New York Department of Environmental Conservation. In an intensive lobbying campaign to influence a skeptical public's opinion about fracking, the gas industry has commissioned a number of economic studies that find huge job gains from fracking. A recent study by the economic forecasting company IHS Global Insight, paid for by America's Natural Gas Alliance, projects that fracking will create 1.1 million jobs in the United States in the next 12 years. However, a closer read of the study reveals that the analysis also projects that fracking will actually lead to widespread job losses in other sectors of the economy and would result in a slightly lower overall employment level over the next 10 years compared to what it would be if fracking were restricted. In another study commissioned by the Marcellus Shale Coalition, researchers with Penn State University estimate the gas drilling would support 216,000 jobs in Pennsylvania over the next 5 years. The most recent data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics show employment in the oil and gas industry to be 4,144 in Pennsylvania. Rather than trying to project what will happen in the future, one could look at what the employment impact has been from Pennsylvania's love affair with fracking in the last 5 years, using actual employment data readily available from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So, they said 216,000 new jobs. Actual jobs, 4,144. So they were only off by 94%? Well, that's typical, right? So they overestimated by 212,000 jobs that didn't happen. Now, if we use those same statistics, we would add about the same number of jobs in New York. So it isn't worth it. I say be against it. And finally, before we go to our op-ed commentary, I will be doing an in-depth analysis of why everything, let me underline this, everything that you're being told in the mainstream media about the threat of nuclear from Iran are lies, why the pro-Israeli super hawk Likud movement headed by Netanyahu are wrong and warmongers, and how this would actually impact all of us in the world. You would think that we learned something from Vietnam. We didn't. Of a completely false Cold War, we didn't. McCarthyism, we didn't learn there either. How about Iraq and Afghanistan? We've learned nothing at all from any of these encounters, and we're ready to do it all over again with the New York Times beating the drums. They'll just find someone else to replace Judith Miller, who was disgraced for having given us false information about why we should have been there because of weapons of mass destruction didn't exist. And no one has been held accountable. I'll be doing an in-depth panel for 4 hours on this in the next 4 weeks. But in the interim, let us not forget that the next time you hear one of these Republicans or the President say we are a nation of laws, no, we're not. We are a nation of psychopaths. We break every law we want. If we want something, we don't care what law exists, we'll go ahead. And if you're powerful, if you're rich, if you're politically connected, you'll get away with it. They got away with it on Wall Street, didn't they? They got away with it in Iraq. Have you seen Cheney or any of his energy panel held accountable, brought in to testify? No. So remember this about the law. This is from Professor Francis Boyd, professor of international law. It's short. Quote, Article 2 of the United Nations Charter requires the pacific settlement of the international dispute between the United States and Iran, to the same effect as Article 33 of the entirety of Chapter 6 of the United Nations Charter, that mandate and set up numerous procedures for pacific settlements of the international dispute between the United States and Iran. And, of course, Article 2 of the United Nations Charter prohibits both the threat and the use of force by the United States against Iran. Furthermore, both Iran and the United States are parties to the Kellogg-Braid Peace Pact of 1928, upon which legal basis the Nazi leaders were prosecuted by the United States and the Nuremberg crimes trial, and they were sentenced to death and executed. In Article 1 thereof, the state parties, quote, condemn recourse to war for the solvation of international controversies and renounce it as an instrument of national policy in their relations with one another, unquote. The United States has been illegally threatening war against Iran going back to the Bush Senior Junior administration. Article 2 requires the United States only to pursue a pacific settlement of its international dispute with Iran, quote, the high contracting parties agree that the settlement or solutions of all disputes or conflicts or whatever nature or of whatever origin they may be, which may arise among them, shall never be sought except by pacific means. That means passive means, unquote. By the way, let us also not forget just a little moment in history. It was back in June of 1914, in Serbia, where the Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Sarajevo was assassinated. And immediately Serbia made an effort to Austria to submit the entire dispute to the International Tribunal of The Hague, of which they were both signatories, and to the Permanent Court of the Arbitration in The Hague. Austria did not accept the offer, World War I broke out, and from 10 to 15 million human beings were needlessly slaughtered. How many do you think are going to die if we allow Israel and the neocons in Washington to assault Iran? Now to our op-ed piece, and then we'll take a break, and you can call in with your thoughts on this. And I'll save one of the other ones for our next program tomorrow. Oh, by the way, I want to thank the Theater for the City of New York. It's a movie theater downtown. We had a free showing of Knocking on the Devil's Door there. They asked, could they show it? And I said, yes. And it was packed. In fact, it was too packed. Not everybody could get in. And thank goodness we had given them some free videos. So about 200 people who couldn't get in got free videos. They've asked, could they show Death by Medicine, my new documentary, free? And I said, yes. But they have a big theater in their theater complex. So next Monday evening, there will be a free showing of Death by Medicine at 8 o'clock. I will be there at 9:30 following the film for an extended, uninterrupted Q&A on this topic. I wasn't able to be there because I was on the road last time. This time I will be there. So if you'd like to go, free. And I thank them for doing this. It's a very kind thing to see the full movie, the most awarded documentary in the world thus far. It's over 63, I think, awards this year for Death by Medicine. It'll be free next Monday evening, 8 p.m., at the Theater for the City of New York. That's at 155 First Avenue between 9th and 10th Streets. Their phone number is 212-254-1109. 212-254-1109. I have my Monday evening show from 7 to 8, but I will come down when the show is over for a Q&A. So I look forward to seeing a lot of people. That theater holds, I don't know how many, 500 or 600, but it'll be full. And hopefully we'll have a nice discussion on this. Now, to our opinion piece, the first of the year, once a week. And you can email me up an opinion piece. By the way, I did not take my laptop with me. When I came back after 81 days on the road, I had 32,000 unanswered, unread emails. So anyone who emailed me, I only now, last evening, I went through about, I think around 265 I read and answered. It's going to take me a while, take me a couple months to get ahead on all those. So when I'm out of town, please don't email me, because I couldn't believe how many I had waiting. It's just overwhelming. But I didn't have a chance to read even one when I was on the road. This is from Julia Dalton from Op-Ed News. Quote, the Obama brand is collapsing just as the Bush brand before him became so craven even the most deluded had to recognize the fraud that had been perpetrated upon the American people. And those of you who still don't see it, you're sort of like the Bushies who believed in the Iraq War and defended the honesty and integrity of their fearless leader no matter how many lies he told. I guess it may prove that we are capable of anything. I believe Barack Obama was put into office to do what no Republican could ever have gotten away with. Obama has extended the wars, created new wars, extended the Bush tax for the rich, given additional bailout money to the banks, allowed the health insurance industry to write the health care bill, extended the Patriot Act, and signed the National Defense Appropriation Act. Under his watch, not one member of the Bush administration has been held accountable for leading us into the wars built on false evidence and lies. Not one banker has been held accountable for the fraud and corruption that brought down the global economy. And the final nail in the coffin was when he signed the National Defense Authorization Bill on New Year's Eve while most Americans sipped champagne and and saying, the National Defense Authorization makes America the battlefield and allows indefinite detention of U.S. citizens suspected of terrorist leaning without any due process or any hard evidence. But why be so negative, you might ask? Here are a few things that Obama did manage to do. He extended the unemployment benefits because there's no jobs, as his stimulus package was too small. He also managed to cut payroll taxes, which is a backdoor way to defund his Social Security. Obama hates truth-tellers like Julian Assange of WikiLeaks and whistleblowers like Bradley Manning, who's been held in detention for almost 2 years for, according to Obama, exposing state secrets, meaning the horrendous war crime. That is if Manning is the alleged leaker who gave the collateral murder video to WikiLeaks showing 12 civilians murdered by American soldiers. What is the difference between the collateral murder in Iraq of those 12 civilians and the 1970 My Lai massacre and the court-martial of Captain Ernest Medina? What is the difference between the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg and Bradley Manning? I mean, isn't this evidence we're now living in a corporate fascist military police state? Now, look, I know there's still plenty of Obama supporters among us, but I find it very difficult to understand why so many people still love, honor, and support this guy. I voted for this guy, too. I fell for his smooth talk, his cool demeanor, and his beautiful smile. I've always been a sucker for, you know, wonderful speech. Well, now I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I know it's hard to admit you made a mistake. I get it. You really believe this guy was the one. And, well, he is the 1% Wall Street, too big to fail banks, military industrial complex, prison industrial complex, big oil, big pharma, corporate fascist state. So he's in place. We looked the other way when he said he'd put on comfy shoes and march with the unions. And then when the unions had their bargaining rights withdrawn, Obama, like the good corporate person he is, remained silent. We made excuses for him when he remained silent as the police brutalized, beat, pepper sprayed, and shot projectiles at peaceful demonstrators. Obama, unlike Robert Kennedy, who had the courage to stand up to the racists down south and brought in the National Guard to protect those fighting for their civil rights, did not. It could be battered spouse syndrome. I know there are people hospitalized with a broken jaw or collarbone, and they won't press charges against their attackers. I can't explain why victims protect their abusers, but they do, and not only do they protect them, they go back to them over and over, only to be beaten again and again. So in conclusion, not to worry, we have Jill Stein of the Green Party, has a very sane 5-point program. I know she may seem boring as well as all love are bad guys, but really, what are we going to do? The Obama brand is collapsing just as the Bush brand before him became so craven. Even the most deluded had to recognize what was being perpetrated upon the American public. End quote, Jill Dalton, artist, activist, feminist, writer. Your thoughts? And once a week, we will have someone from the audience give their opinion piece, which you can share your thoughts with. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, from the board's report, other Republicans agree, Elizabeth, who's in studio, not to tell Rick Perry where the next debate is. Yeah, in a move that they are calling the only humane thing to do. The other Republican candidates for president have agreed not to tell Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, anything. The candidates reached the decision after a two-debate weekend in which Rick Perry put in a performance that, in the words of former Utah Governor John Huntsman, was brave but painful to watch. Immediately following the final New Hampshire debate on Sunday morning, an awkward scene unfolded on stage as Mr. Perry asked the other candidates, "So, where's everyone going now?" "I don't know, Rick," the former House Speaker Newt Gingrich said, looking down at his shoes. "Isn't there going to be another debate after this?" Mr. Perry persisted. "Not that I know of, Rick," said former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. "I'll let you know if I hear anything." After Mr. Perry left the stage, Mr. Romney told a reporter that he felt, quote, "felt bad about fibbing to Rick. Putting him out there on stage would just be cruel." Elsewhere in the NFL, a Sunday, God defeated Satan in overtime. We're going to go to our guests in a moment here, but I'm interested in some of your calls, your thoughts on our commentary from our op-ed piece. Please call us and share your points of view. 888-874-4888. And by the way, last night we broke a record for the most people ever downloading a program. It was in the tens and tens of thousands overnight, just overnight, of the three-hour talk of Chris Hedges on the Progressive Commentary Hour. And anyone who missed that 3 hours, boy, that'll turn your brain upside down and inside out. You can go to the website and download it. Elizabeth, a few things from you, then we go to our guest.
Yes, hello. yesterday you replied to a lady's question about what would you be asking Mitt Romney if you were the person chairing the debates. And there was a huge response to that. And interesting, the media today are talking about your answer, how there were five companies, for example, when he was in the equity partnerships, all of them went bankrupt. The mainstream media have taken on this story, so it means that they've been listening into the show, and therefore today they've taken their story from it. And does this happen often? People are asking, is this a normal occurrence here?
I have no idea who listens and who takes anything from the show. Mm-hmm. Historically, you'll hear someone that you never hear anywhere else here, and then the next day you'll hear it. In fact, one time, one of our guests, our conversation with the Remarkable Minds, while we were on the phone, she said that her office was getting a call, which she'd appear on another program based upon that. We know that people listen because we like to really find interesting topics. But look, hey, if they found that what I was discussing yesterday about, and by the way, there's a lot more than five. I only mentioned five. I could mention many more.
Yeah.
About 7,000 people who are employed. My whole point was that when he talks about creating jobs, a tiny number of people caused over 30 million Americans to lose their jobs through equity partnerships buying their companies, like Circuit City, linens and things, and then downsizing. Where do you think the money came from to close down American factories and ship them to China and India? That takes a lot of money.
Yeah.
That came from equity partnerships buying the American company or brand because they wanted the brand. After all, when American buys a brand, they're not looking inside to see was that brand made in America with a union labor. They're just buying the brand. So you buy the brand, you made your profit up front. Remember, all of the people like Mitt Romney and Henry Kravitz and Silverstone and BlackRock's Conrad Black, all these people, they make their money off the deal because when they buy your company, they put an enormous amount of profit in it for themselves. So no matter what happens to the company, they've made their money. They're called vulture capitalists.
Yeah.
See, there is room for ethical capitalism, honorable capitalism, but vulture capitalism should not be supported, and that's how Mitt Romney made his money.
Right.
That was the whole point.
Yes.
Let them do their homework, and they'll find there's at least 27 other companies that he could be challenged on having anything to do. He is not a person that understands what it is to be a worker. He's never had to walk on a floor of a company that actually makes something. All right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just looking to see if we have calls from our audience. And if we do here, I'm looking. Who do we have? I just need a name so I can introduce someone. Max from New York City. Hi, Max. You're on.
Hello, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. You do a fantastic job. Listen, I'm calling about the state constitution zone within the airports. This is something that is very surprising to me. Something similar I heard to this yesterday. Alex Jones brought this up, and he said that there's a new law passed in Jersey that if I see that my neighbor has a gun in his house, this could be a legal registered gun. I call the police. The police come and seize the gun, and I get $1,000. This, to me, is sounding a bit fascistic, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would. I
not
believe
to mention that destroying the Constitution. I mean, it's part of the Constitution to be able to own arms.
That is correct, and I support that. And I believe that not enough Americans are fully aware of how egregious some of the acts have become against our rights. And you don't see it until suddenly all healthcare workers in New York State now are being mandated to take all the major vaccines. Even there's not a shred of scientific evidence that will protect them or will protect their patients. But it's being pushed by ALEC-funded pharmaceutical companies that manufacture the vaccines. But no one's going to pull that cover back and show you, you want the nurses, orderly, and physicians, and everyone in a hospital, working in a hospital, even delivering things to hospital, have all these vaccines. We must trust that this is for the welfare and benefit of the patient and the doctor or nurse, but you have no science to support it. And the answer is yes, they have no science. That's what happens when a right is taken away. And then when you refuse them, they can say, well, then you're fired. So I'm saying everywhere we look, our rights are being challenged. And the person who is complacent or thinks, well, it's not that important, I don't see it. Remember, they never see anything. You know, you can't see your heart occluding and for 20 or 30 years. Just like the President of the United States has considered the best doctors in America. 3 weeks after giving him an absolute clean bill of health, they rushed Clinton in for a triple bypass operation. They all missed that he was near death. Do we have to become, as a society, virtually without a Bill of Rights that are effective or a constitution or in honoring international treaties and laws to prevent war before we realize that people were engaged in the belief our complacency would undo us? Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Let's go to my guest who is standing by. Jim Gottstein is president and co-founder of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights in Alaska, whose mission is to mount a campaign against forced psychiatric drugging and electroshock treatment in the U.S., with an emphasis on the rapid rise in forced drugging of children. His winning the Alaska Supreme Court case against the Alaska Psychiatric Institute was a landmark ruling, and he was responsible for the release of the Zyprexa papers that resulted in a call for congressional investigation led to Zyprexa's maker, Eli Lilly, pleading guilty and paying $1.4 billion in civil and criminal fines. Nice to have you with us today, Jim.
Thank you, Gary. I'm pleased to be with you.
We're beginning an entire year of discussions, short discussions, but ongoing discussions of why our rights are being taken away to be able to control our own lives, where our behavior, that of our children, shouldn't be pathologized, diagnosed as a disease, and then under certain circumstances, like teen screen, where our children could actually be forcibly taken away from us, put into a mental institution, forcibly drugged, given electroconvulsive therapy, and we as parents would have no right, all because in one case, real case, a kid wrote on a teen screen that they like to keep a clean bedroom and didn't like parties, and they considered that's too psychiatric diagnosis. They had a compulsive disorder because they liked to keep a clean house, and they had shyness disorder because they didn't like the loud parties. People don't think it can happen. It is happening. Take us on this journey, and today we're only going to focus upon teen screen and how we, you, myself, and this audience, have to stop believing and challenge that our kids are brain chemical imbalanced, have all these illnesses. These are legitimate diagnoses and legitimate drugs, which they're not. The forum is yours.
Well, thank you, Gary. We know that the teen screen really is a drugging dragnet, and you're talking about people's rights being taken away and all that. And I think what's really happening is that everything is driven by money these days, and there's just a lot of money to be made on drugging children and youth. And one of the things that I really want to point out is that most of the psychiatric drugging of children and youth is done to poor children on Medicaid. And Congress actually prohibited payments, reimbursement for off-label prescriptions that don't have scientific support. And the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which run that program, CMS, have failed to enforce that restriction. And there's actually some funny business going on with that I probably don't have time to go in to. And children on Medicaid are four times more likely to be prescribed neuroleptics, which are misnomered antipsychotics. They really have very little antipsychotic properties for most. The most horrific ones, like Risperdal especially, was promoted in the use of children through the fraudulent research of Joseph Biederman at Harvard Medical School. So, and then there is a recent report from the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, that foster children are 9 to 13 times more likely to be given these drugs than children and youth on Medicaid, which already are four times more likely to be given these drugs. And I've been working with this group in Alaska called Facing Foster Care in Alaska, and I've gone to some of their retreats, and about 90% of them have been given psychiatric drugs. The GAO report doesn't document it that high, but that's what this group of people report, and these are really the best ones. And so I feel like I'm just going on and on, but one of the things that's really important is that Senator Carper from Delaware, he's the one who called for the GAO report, is investigating this, and we wrote a briefing paper and gave it to our senator, Senator Begich, who's on that subcommittee, and it's on our website, psychrights.org, to really get to push the government to enforce this restriction to what's called a medically accepted indication. And so that's one thing. And the other is that we have established an initiative for people to really take direct action through what's called the False Claims Act or whistleblower lawsuits, also known as Key Town lawsuits. And it's a special, unique federal statute that allows anybody to sue for fraud on behalf of the federal government. And our idea, what's happened, you mentioned Eli Lilly paying $1.4 billion, of which I got none, and I got saddled with about $300,000 in legal fees, of which I still owe a bunch. Pfizer paid $2.3 billion, AstraZeneca, I think, paid $750 million. And on and on. But these drug companies, these giant or seemingly giant drug company settlements are not really solving the problem because it's just a cost of doing business to them.
Jim, let's go for that for one more moment here. And for any station that has to say goodbye in another minute and a half, you can continue listening to the rest of this interview on my internet radio program. By the way, yesterday's original commentary on Gardasil that I'm absolutely opposed to based upon it having no science that it's doing anything good and a lot of damage, that went on for an additional 17 minutes. So if you missed that, you can go and download it. Here's part of the problem. The problem is that throughout all of human history, as people are growing up, they go through different adjustments, and these adjustments mean one day they may be happy, another day sad. They may speak out or may be shy. These are not and should never have been listed as psychiatric conditions, and there's no science whatsoever to back them up. And in fact, as you will see and everyone will see this May, when we're going to be, I'll be down helping to lead a demonstration in Philadelphia, May 5th, to boycott the American Psychiatric Association, and they're a big meeting. There is undercover film of 12 psychiatrists, all board certified, all of them being given a completely healthy, normal person, all diagnosing this person with different mental conditions and giving them different prescriptions. Then when later confronted, they were completely non-moved by it. And then asking people attending American Psychiatric Association meeting outside, is there a brain chemical imbalance? We can't prove any. Can you actually show me proof of a brain chemical imbalance in your and for schizophrenia or bipolar? No, we can't. I mean, across the board. So how in the world do all these psychiatrists, mental health officials, get away with saying your kid has this and therefore we should give these medications, and you're not a good parent if you don't give them the medications, or we may turn child services on you and take your kid away if you don't give these medications, when there is zero science behind anything currently being engaged in the pharmaceutical approach to mental health?
Well, I think that there are really two things that are important to think about. One is that, as you said, children go through these different phases and may act out at different times, or you know, and basically when they become problems for the adults in their lives, when they become a pain in the neck, then basically they get targeted for these drugs, because what the drugs do is basically sedate them and just make them so that they're not so troublesome. And I really want to focus on foster children, or talk a little bit about what's happening with foster children and youth, is because if you think about it, as a legal matter, if a child or youth gets put into foster care because they've been found to have been the subject of abuse or neglect. Okay, so that's going to make someone upset, a child or youth upset, whatever's going on at home that would cause that. And no matter what is going on at home, getting yanked out of their home is going to make that child or youth upset. And then these foster placements oftentimes are really horrific. People get assaulted, they get raped, and then there's a sense of not really belonging, that lots of them have multiple placements. And this, I went to this Facing Foster Care in Alaska meeting once, and some of them had over 20 placements. And so there's this idea that nobody cares for them. And so what you have is all kinds of reasons why these children and youth will have emotional difficulties. And that manifests itself in, you know, in behaviors that adults don't like. And so what we should be doing is helping these children become successful. And instead what we do is we say there's something wrong with your brain, which is total poppycock.
But Jim, put yourself in the position of a pharmaceutical industry. You're very smart. You're very rich. You have an unlimited accesses through your holding companies and your boards of directors to banks, because one of the things pharmaceutical companies frequently have on their board of directors are heads of banking institutions. Look at Goldman Sachs. Look at these people. Why? Because they can say, we need this amount of money to pay this lawsuit. And they say, okay, that's only 4 months worth of profit. So they pay $1 billion. Everybody says, good, now you're okay, that's all behind you. Nobody asked the moral and ethical question, well, what brought you to that place to make those decisions? It wasn't one person. It was a whole bunch of people who decided, we've got a bad, dangerous product, but it's very profitable. It only costs us about 23 cents for a 30-day supply. We can sell it through Medicare or Medicaid, or in the state hospital, which is Medicaid, for $220 a bottle. And because we paid the lobbyist in to hustle Congress in the House, they passed a law that didn't allow them to negotiate a cheaper price. So we really benefited to about $1 trillion over a 10-year period. $1 trillion. That's, so if you put $30 million into lobbyists' pockets, who then put that $30 million into politicians' pockets, or guarantee them jobs when they leave Congress, which many did immediately after that bill was passed. They left, went to work for a pharmaceutical company, one for $2 million a year. That's just good business, isn't it? So, I'm not quite finished. So now they're willing to say, we can buy legislators, we can buy scientists, we can buy ghost writers to put articles in peer-reviewed literature. The FDA is not going to challenge us. We own them. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is not going to challenge us. We own them. The White House won't dare. We've been in there many times. We have everyone on our board, including former policymakers, these institutions, and former politicians. So we own the game. Now, the only thing we don't own yet is we haven't convinced everyone in America that they're crazy or that their kids are crazy. That's not hard to do, because look at all the garbage they watch, look at the stupid things they buy that they feel they need, including pet rocks. So if someone's stupid enough to buy a pet rock, surely we can convince them that the acting out of their daughter is a brain chemical imbalance, because that makes us money. Now, that's how the game has worked. Or do you, if you don't believe that's how it's worked, then challenge me on my statement.
Oh, I wish it wasn't the way that it worked. You're absolutely right, and it's so important that you're shining a public light on this, because I think it's the only way that anything can be done. The immorality involved is just astounding, that the drug companies would deliberately target poor, disadvantaged children to give them drugs that not only will more likely cause them to experience symptoms diagnosed as mental illness and become disabled for life, but also these drugs are causing, in adults in the public mental health system are now dying 25 years earlier on average than the general population. And there we have no idea what the effect is going to be.
But you see, therein is the rub. Jim, the biggest mistake that we could have made in all our discussion is, why, if they're dying 25 years earlier when they're an adult, why didn't we mandate that every politician have to take these drugs? That would be a natural way of creating term limits. We're out of time, Jim.
Well, I think the doctors prescribing these drugs should be required to take them, frankly.
I think every psychiatrist and regular practice should be required to take electroconvulsive therapy every weekend for life. Jim, you're doing a lot of good work up there. We just wanted to open the door to this discussion today. PsychRights.org. Psych, P-Y-S-C-H, Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S.org. Jim Gottstein, G-O-T-T-S-T-A-E-I-N, the Doctor of Jurisprudence, is my guest. Jim, we're going to have additional conversations, but you caused Zyprexa to have maker Eli Lilly to cough up $1.4 billion in civil and criminal fines. So you showed one person can make a difference. We're going to ask everyone in this audience, make a difference. Say no to psychiatry. There are psych drugs for you and your children. All the best to you, Jim.
Thank you, Gary. You too.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.